Hello, welcome to Mosaics. We are a podcast of the Idaho Office for Refugees. We have a guest here today who lives in Singapore, but he is visiting Idaho for the month, and we are lucky enough to be able to meet him and chat with him. So please join me in welcoming Yifeng. Welcome, Yifeng.
Thank you, Holly, for this chance to connect with you and have this conversation.
Yeah, it's really special that we met at the Refugee Speakers Bureau workshop, and I didn't know you were helping the facilitator. I thought you were just like a very enthusiastic participant who came
early. Could be both.
Was helping us put the name tags out. I was like, wow, this person is so motivated. And then I realized like, oh, you're here as a co-facilitator.
No, I'm just an enthusiastic participant.
that was fun. And it was cool because we got to chatting about your background in mental health. You're a social worker and a mental health planner for workspaces, which is so cool to bring that together. And you're telling me about narrative therapy and just fascinating things. So I'm glad we have a chance to talk today. I also want to mention that you're here with the Waisili program, and that's an exchange program with the Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative. So you get to come here for a month, live with a host, have a workplace mentor, and then ideally someone from here would get to go to Singapore.
Yes.
Maybe me. No, I'm just kidding. That would be pretty cool. So how many weeks in are you right now?
Oh, wow. Time really flies, Holly. It's been about 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks so far in Boise. Okay.
And 1.5 more week to go.
You already got yourself on a podcast. Good job.
Woo-hoo. Thank you, Holly. Buddy Holly.
So he's here in May, which also is Mental Health Month in the U.S., which is perfect for the work that you do. So I know you've been meeting with local leaders and organizations to talk about best practices with youth, communities, and workplace mental health, which is such an important conversation. So thank you for being here, and just share a little bit about yourself so our listeners and viewers can get to know you a little better.
Sure. First, thank you so much again, Holly, for this opportunity to be here with you. It is really a big honor, and it has been a dream to be on a podcast, and what better podcast than to go on Mosaic? And I really love the name of Mosaic because I think the whole idea of Wisely, the Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative, is really about appreciating the diversity of how things come together, right? Differences are not to be afraid of. Differences are just different. And so my name is Yifeng, and I come from Singapore. Friends call me the mental health guy for doing many things relating to mental health for the past 12 years. I have spent about the past 6 to 7 years working as a mental health professional. I've recently pivoted to become a workplace mental health service planner so as to look into further developing, going a bit even more upstream to tackle some of the systemic issues that affect us. And that was what attracted me, I think, very much towards coming to Boise, Idaho, to learn a lot about all these practices, the best practices in youth mental health, community mental health, and workplace mental health. And it was really an amazing experience to be with you at the Refugee Speakers Bureau because I think the stories really come alive and touch our hearts.
Oh, yeah, that was such a cool event. People from all over the world, many different ages. I thought that was cool too, learning kind of how to shape their stories for a way that is beneficial for them to share and for the people to hear. So that was very cool to have that experience. I haven't had a guest from Singapore. I mean, Singapore is not a country we traditionally work with in refugee resettlement. So just in getting to know you and talking with you, I've learned a lot about Singapore, which has been fascinating. Can you share a little bit about your country with us?
Happy to. And I think there's just three things that come to mind right away when you ask that. I think the first thing about Singapore is that we are a relatively small nation. We have a lot of nicknames. One of the nicknames that we have been given is called the Little Red Dot, because we are about 6 million people in 280 square miles. So it's a highly dense populated area. And at the same time, I think one of the things that Singapore is often very much well known of is that it is a garden city. We are clean and green, right?
Wow.
So when I come to Boise, which is called the City of Trees, I felt at home immediately, right? It's beautiful. I mean, Boise is beautiful. And likewise in Singapore, there are trees and trees. The only thing that we don't have the difference is the space. I mean, we are very much dense, and Boise is vast and beautiful. One other thing that possibly I think that might be related to a little bit of what we talk about is that we have four key races in Singapore. We are a multiracial nation, multi-religious, multi-ethnic population, we often see things of ourselves as a melting pot, mm-hmm. a bit like what I like to call rojak, which is in Singapore, is a local dish. It is okay. mixed together of all different kinds of dishes as well as things that it makes it look like a salad, but it's like a fruit salad plus you have different daff stick and all. But the whole idea of that, I think, is that 80%, I would think, that of Singaporeans in our earlier days are actually migrants. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so only about 15 to 20% are actually local, indigenous peoples of the land. So I thought that was something when I got this chance to be on this podcast, I'm very excited because even though we don't talk as much about refugees or immigrants in Singapore, it is actually a very big part of our heritage mm-hmm. in Singapore.
Mm-hmm. And you were sharing with me too about the languages that are represented, the top ones. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So we have three main races in Singapore. So Chinese, Indians, and Malays. The Chinese takes up about 74% of the population. Indians take up about 9%, and Malays about 13-14%. The rest are called others, whatever that means, right?
Others on the form.
Yes, literally we have that, which is, all right, it's a whole thing in itself. But I think the key thing was CIMO. So we often call it Chimo or CIMO. For each race, we have their own languages. And in Singapore, the working language of Singapore, and I think most, if not all Singaporeans speaks English. That's our working language. Mm-hmm. My mother tongue is Chinese because I am a Singaporean Chinese. And with that, I speak Mandarin. At the same time, one thing that I was sharing with you about is, I think one of the things that I think is most people don't know about Singapore is that our national language is actually Malay. And our national anthem, national song is Malay. And that actually... that is something that is not very well known. And I speak Malay, I speak Bahasa Indonesia, because to get more connected to the region around me, Singapore is not just on its own as a small country, but we are part of a larger region called Southeast Asia. And that's also where this program really is situated, because we are the seventh largest economy in the world.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And that's where I think we really have a lot to learn from US. And I think that's a lot of chances for collaboration and co-creation, like what we're doing right now.
Yeah. Olive. Yeah, you were sharing about 6 million people in the, was it about 285?
Yeah.
285 square miles. Yeah. And we were looking up Idaho, which has less than 2 million people, and we have over 86,000 square miles.
Yeah.
So you were saying in Singapore, you know, the city has to be so well planned out for that many people to comfortably live, which here the space is nice, but then we don't always have like the same kind of planning when it comes to transportation and effective access in that way. So,
yeah, I think one of the things I really appreciate about Singapore was the idea of how our chief architect of Singapore planned out Singapore. When you look at urban city planning, especially a place as dense as Singapore, mm-hmm. how do you plan for well-being? How do you design for that? And he gave a metaphor that stuck with me even until today. When people play checkered boards or like chess.
Oh, like chess.
Box. Okay. So there's always an alternate. So in Singapore, it's always high buildings on one area, and then the alternative box will be a garden.
Oh, cool.
Or trees, right? Yeah. So what it does is it gives the undulating images an illusion of space and makes Singapore look larger than it actually is. Mm. And also a bit more well, because you can see that, oh, across that I have a playground, I have trees, right? And Singapore has parks that are within, this is something that I always like tell people, Singapore has more than 450 parks,
wow.
right? And it's all connected. There's a park connector network that links all the parks, right,
so
around
cool.
Singapore. So even though we're very small, their planning for well-being makes a big difference. And I think there is that beauty, and I give a lot of thanks for that for Singapore.
I love that. That's so cool. You were sharing about kind of your career journey, how you got to where you are today. I was fascinated to hear that everyone, men and women, right, in Singapore need to serve in the military. Oh, just the men?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The men need to serve the military for 2 years. So you did that at age 18.
Yeah.
But also on your heart was journalism, which
yes.
is cool to hear because obviously that's what I did
oh.
too. So it's...
Fist bump.
what was attractive to you about journalism?
I think one of the big things about journalism is the power of the pen. I have the hope and the belief that when we tell our truths, we build a different world. We build a different world that everyone can come to be. And one thing that I love a lot, Holly, is how people could speak through us, not just to us. And I think journalism has often that power. And I also wonder about your experiences better in through your journey, more than 10 years, more than a decade in journalism, the power of the pen that you held in your hands, how many people could speak through you, not just to you. I do a bit of that in my role as a therapist previously, when I hold space for young people with mental health conditions. As they tell me their stories, I bring all their issues together as a systemic, I consolidate them as a systemic thinking, and I present that towards policymakers, service planners, and then we co-create the policies or services that could support them even further. But I'm actually curious about you, I think, Holly, as well. Like, were there times where you felt like your writing, people were speaking through your writing?
I definitely think sometimes people that, to give someone a platform that maybe otherwise didn't have one was always a really special thing.
Exactly, this podcast, right?
This podcast too, yeah. For that, and I like the podcast too because people's own voices get people get to hear you say it in your own voice and your own inflections. And I was a print journalist, and so sometimes we would have really meaningful interviews for an hour, and then I would go to write the story, and all you can do is put in the print quotes, and it just didn't always come across. But I do think it was still a beautiful way of sharing stories. One of the most meaningful times for me was when this family, there was kind of a business leader in our community, and he died unexpectedly. And so I was going to, it's a small town journalism, small town paper, which I really love. And so when something like that happens, you write a feature about it. So I got to meet with his family. I had never met this family before ever. And I was probably like 24 years old, 23 years old. And they invited me into their living room. And there's like 10 of them sitting in a circle sharing stories of their dad or husband or brother, whoever he was to them. And I took all of that and had to write a story.
Wow.
And it's intimidating because you want to do right by them.
Yeah.
And they were so honored when it came out. Mm. They're like, you captured him perfectly. And that's like the biggest compliment or honor. So like, it's kind of a space in history. It's like a shared moment in history, whether it's a big news event or like a community grieving somebody, a family grieving somebody. And now there's a shared story.
Exactly.
So
yeah, I think they really speak not just to you, but through you to the larger community to celebrate his life, right?
Yeah. So that was really special, things like that. And then I know for me, I grew up in a very kind of sheltered home. So I didn't always hear about people's experiences from other backgrounds, like LGBTQ backgrounds or different faith backgrounds. And it was through podcasting that I opened my eyes, opened my heart. And that's also, I think, a really special tool for that.
Wow, that's wonderful. And maybe perhaps I think opening your eyes, your hearts. In my practice, I often say that social work is the heart-head-hand connection. As we open up our hearts, we open up our heads and our hands, right, to be able to do the things that you do right now.
Now you're interviewing me. How'd you do that?
I knew that. That's the power of the therapist.
You're so tricky. I'm like, and then I'm going to start telling you about my mother. No, I'm just kidding. No.
I have two packs of tissues all ready for you, Holly.
Oh, my gosh. So as you've been traveling here, have you noticed any differences in terms of like the approach to mental health or like ideas about mental health?
Wow, I mean, such a beautiful question. One key thing, Holly, that I always say in anything is that it is same, but different. And that's a big part of our, that's quite a big phrase in my region of the world. We often think that we are same, but different. Southeast Asia is same, but different. There's always this idea of in-group heterogeneity, out-group homogeneity. Right. So when you think of people who are outside, you think of them as all the same. Yeah. But when you think of yourself in your community, everyone is different. And I think that's a big perspective that I had to shift when I came over to US in the past few weeks. What I've been noticing is that different parts in the US are all different, right? And everyone practices differently. Before I came to US, I was like, US is the state, is the country to learn from in relation to mental health.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's so interesting. And since 12 years ago, I have learned about NAMI, right? National Alliance for Mental Illness. I've learned about them. I've read up about Substance Abuse, Mental Health Services Association, SAMHSA, right? Read up all the literature, and I'm so enthusiastic about the work that they do and all. And when I come over here, I think I've come to realize that each part of US, within US itself, is at their different phase of development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is not homogeneous. And I think that's something that I come to appreciate a lot about, that every part, it has to be localized solutions to things. Whether it be youth mental health, whether it be community mental health, whether be it workplace mental health. I give a quick example. I'm really excited to have met Ashley Harmons. She's a licensed clinical social worker at the Boise Public Library. Did you know that you have a social worker
in the library? I did know that.
You did?
It's so
You're cool.
I don't know Ashley specifically, but I knew that they had brought somebody on with that expertise.
Exactly.
Very cool.
And Ashley was so kind to give me some of her time to have a conversation. And she has been around for about 2 years, I think, in Boise. She's originally an Idaho, right? So it's, I think, extra special for her. And for library social work to take place, we spoke a lot of our time talking about housing crisis, persons in housing crisis. And I learned from her that the way that she calls people who are homeless, right? They don't call the homeless, they call them persons in housing crisis. Mm-hmm. And that is a more dignifying way to call them, because it's people first. And often there's also a conflation with untreated mental disorders.
Mm.
Yeah. So when we think about that in perspective, the libraries are perfect places for persons who are in housing crisis to come to, because it is a safe refuge. It has water at the fountains. It has heat. It has air conditioning when needed in the summers. So library social work became was a concept that really got me thinking, because we don't have that in Singapore, right? And that is something that to me was about contextualizing it to the state itself of where the practice is. And Ashley is so amazing. She described herself as a walking Rolodex. She pulls resources from everywhere to support people, right? And she may not have the resources herself, but she knows of where the resources are. And I think that's the magic. That she has the magic behind it. So I have huge respect for Ashley and the hard work she does. And I think that's an example of how contextualized solutions look like, right? That works for over here in Boise, Idaho, but may not work for another area, maybe.
Yeah, it is such a large country, such different culturally as you travel it, and different approaches to it. That's really cool. You got to see Ashley, though, and the work that she's doing.
One thing that I've been thinking a lot about is about rural mental health. Yeah, I think that's something that we have not seen. Singapore is fully urbanized, right? We are a nation state, also a city country. Right. So the whole, our city, Singapore city, is Singapore.
Right? Yeah.
So where's the rural? We don't. And over here, I think when I come to Idaho and Boise, I start to realize that rural mental health is a really big thing. Farmers' mental health is a big thing. And that has to be, when we think a lot about the larger issues that are surrounding, like climate change, industrialized agriculture, those issues could play a big part towards contributing and affecting farmers' mental health. And that was not something I ever thought of, right? And again, so I go back to that point of it being very contextualized. Same, but different.
Yeah, different. I know in reporting locally in rural areas in Idaho, different communities have different views on what mental health looks like. I know in some places it's like seeing a therapist, but in other places it's not seeing a therapist. You know, that's not even really on the radar. And I've noticed that too with people coming into Idaho from all over the world, and different approaches to what mental health feels like and looks like to them. One woman told me that dancing like saved her mental health through a lot of trauma.
Wow.
And this community is the way different communities connect.
Wow.
It's funny when you said you look to the US as like a mental health leader.
Yeah.
I think that I do appreciate the organizations and the thought leadership, but I have felt lately like more and more people are struggling with mental health. Have you seen that too? Do you feel like that's true in Singapore?
Yeah, I think definitely that we do see a lot more young persons in particular reaching out for help. And I personally find that to be a happy problem.
Yeah.
In this, and it's a good sign that there's increasing openness to seek help. And yet at the same time, I think it's also a worrying thing because suicide is the leading cause of death for young persons between 10 to 24 years old in Singapore. Mm-hmm. So I've been hearing a little bit about things happening over here in Boise. I think about how the Communities for Youth have been doing, there's this organization, amazing organization, that's been led by associate professor Megan Smith. She's been doing great work to engage and also to learn more about youth mental health, to inform policies and all. And I think that in itself seems to be also a rising concern. And that's also why I talk about how things, I think, are same but different. Mm. That the issues facing youths are similar, but also maybe a bit different in terms of context over here in Boise, Idaho. Over in Singapore, I often say that there are four things that makes youth fret. Yeah, F-R-E-T.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Family, relationships, expectations, and transitions.
Mm.
All these are four things that I think when they come together, they increase the stress that the young person is facing, sometimes towards the point of de-stress, which may then tip them over towards even a mental health concern or conditions.
Mm.
Over in Idaho, I think that when I think about that, these four issues become even further amplified because people do leave their... I do see that some young persons leave their homes early to stay in college, to go to college and sorts. That transition itself is a movement across country, it could be, or movement across cities even. And those transitions are huge, right? And it can have a big... It is positive, but it can also have a big impact on mental health mm-hmm. as they are trying to adjust towards a new environment. Yeah. So, and all these four issues, when they come together all at once, can really affect a young person as they're trying to cope and find their place in the world.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. So fret, family, relationships, expectations,
transitions.
Mm. I still feel like that's what all my fretting is about.
Right, adulting, right?
What does adulting stand for? It's what I worry about.
Oh.
No, I mean, and part of me is like, are people just more open now? Mm. It could be that we're more open to say, I'm struggling with this or... You know, maybe people in the past felt that way, but just would keep it to themselves. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we are still kind of trying to bounce back from COVID or there's a lot. I just feel like there's a lot right now of heaviness, like around the world, things going on around the world that are really heavy. And just makes me wonder, like, if people's mental health is kind of doing worse now or if we're just talking about it more so that it's kind of like we're more open about it.
Yeah, I totally resonate with you on that, Holly. I mean, sometimes I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. It could be both. And I like to think that it's both, that it could be that people are struggling a bit more. And that could also be contextual because of the stresses that we are facing right now. Beyond FRET, there are also so much more, I think, of climate change, environmental degradation, many things all coming together at one go. In addition to that, I think it could also be because people are more willing to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been really honored and really pleased to... I was at the... And there are two things here in Idaho that really surprises me so much. May is the Mental Health Awareness Month, and there was a green light up across the country. And so I managed to go to Zion's Bank, the main street, I think.
Zion's Bank. Light.
Yeah. It was a light up. There was a green light up. And to me, I felt that that was a very real, visual declaration of support for mental health. When mental health conditions can often be invisible. Some days later, I went towards the Capitol and I managed to hear Governor Brett Little, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
To speak about mental health, a proclamation as a mental health celebration. He calls it a Mental Health Celebration Month and he did a proclamation to designate, I think, May as a month of mental health awareness and stress the importance of it.
Mm.
I think those very public support of this movements make a big difference to normalize mental health the conversations surrounding mental health and help seeking. That people don't feel that, I think, that seeking help is an act of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
But it is both, it is actually a sign of strength to be able to be asked for help and to give help at the same time. So I thought that was something that really struck me during my time here.
Wow, that's very cool. It's a perfect time for you to visit.
Perfect time.
Did you know really? It was going to be Mental Health Month when you came?
I did know. Okay. And I am so thankful because in Singapore, our Mental Health Month is in October. Mm-hmm. So I am getting all these good ideas, Holly. Getting all of them.
Earlier, you were sharing before this that belonging is a huge part of mental health and connecting it all. Can you share more about that?
Sure. Wow. Belonging really is a big piece of, I think, how we come together. In my previous work working with young persons with mental health conditions, I've come to realize that there are four F's that keep young people from taking their lives. I often ask them this question when I do suicide prevention work. I will ask them, what holds you back from taking your life? Or what keeps you going? And that is my favorite question, Holly, because I think that's when we really get to the crux of who they are as a person. Mm-hmm. And through my 300-400 conversations with young people, I've come to realize that there are four F's always. Mm-hmm. Family and friends, a future that they hope towards, a focus on what they are doing at this point in time, and faith, what they believe in. Communities and belonging, I think, is a central part of this four F's coming together. Family and friends, that's a big part of who they are, who their identity are as they start to go into this. Who are the people that can be in my team of life, in my board of directors? As we work in nonprofit settings, we often think of that. Who is your own board of directors, Holly? Who is our listeners' own team of life? Who's in their own team? Who's backing them? Who's in their offense? Who's in their defense? Who's in their midfield? Who's their goalkeeper keeping their life? I think in addition to that also, when we think a bit about the focus, what are they doing? Who are they doing this for? What are they doing it for? And when people have that meaning, it makes a big difference. And belonging is often one of that huge, huge meaning. And in addition to that, I think the idea of the future, what are we building it for? I often realize that people, as once, when they start to think about what they are building it for, that makes a whole big difference. I was in a cab, right? And I was sharing with you as on my cab over here. I was it was such an amazing chance to be driven by this gentleman who used to be an Afghan pilot. Mm. And he was sharing with me that he asked me, bro, are you married? I said, no. I said, when you have kids, you know what responsibility is like. Mm. It's a whole different thing because you now know what you are fighting for, what you're living for. Mm. What you're who you're belonging to, what you're belonging to. Yeah.
That's really special. I know, what a small world that you got to ride in a lift with one of the helicopter pilots from Afghanistan, who I got to meet through our global talent program.
Wow.
Just a wonderful human being. So glad you got to meet him.
I am so glad too. I'm so glad. It was a life-giving conversation.
And like watching them, you know, go through all they've gone through and work so hard for their families and not being able to reunite with their families yet after all this time, but working really, really hard and supporting each other. Talk about community. Those guys really support each other.
Yeah. I think that's something that when they feel that they are not alone, that makes such a big difference. And to know what they are living for, that's a powerful thing.
So much purpose.
So much.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I really enjoyed this conversation with you. I'm going to remember the fret and the four F's. Mm. I think that's really helpful to think about it that way. Do you have anything else that you'd want to leave with people?
Wow, there's so many things that I want to leave with people. Perhaps I'll leave just this one thing I've noticed a little bit about during my time here in US. Mm-hmm. I notice people like to ask, how are you doing? And my invitation is to really invite the listeners to consider really asking that. Mm-hmm. How are you doing really? How are you doing out of 10? And this helps, I notice, especially with men. There tends to be sometimes a bit more concrete. Right? Oh, if you say it's out of 10, then it's like, oh, I'm doing 7. Okay. Yeah, and then you start a bit of that conversation. What makes it 7 rather than 6, right? And then you could go on the conversation to find out what's working for them, and then what is their hope for something different. And I wanna make the invitation, because it's beautiful that people really ask that greeting over here. And in Singapore, often how we ask people, how we greet people is, "Have you eaten?"
Oh.
So food is a big part of our culture. When I'm eating in this meal, I'm thinking of my next meal. Right. But over here, there tends to be the tendency, "How are you doing?"
Yeah.
Which is great. But I'm also very concerned, because I think often people expect a certain answer to "How are you doing?"
Yeah, I think we use it more of a filler greeting. Like, it's not, and it's not like always an appropriate time to, like, you're passing in the hallway at work, you don't actually want that person to be exactly. Like, "Well, let me tell you."
Yeah. How much time do you have?
I didn't mean to ask. Yeah. We just use it as like, "Hey, what's up? How are you doing?"
Yeah.
But I think you're right. In the right moments with the right person, really getting to share that is important.
Yeah.
We need a new greeting that's like...
Yeah. It could still be, "How are you doing?
Bye bye."
Yeah.
I like that. Have you eaten?
Yeah. In Boise, we do it with a wave. I was told this, so it could be a wave, right? But I really wanted to...
Do you not wave in Singapore?
Oh, we we smile.
So is it weird to wave?
Does
that mean something else?
No. It doesn't mean anything. I think it is nice to wave and just to acknowledge the person. But I think the whole idea, like you mentioned, is about helping the other person feel seen, right? And so the invitation, I think, maybe it's not a different greeting. I love the greeting actually over here. But I think it might be to consider making time to hear what a person has to say behind all their stories. And I think this cuts across in the families, in the community, in the workplaces. Because when we get to really hear the stories of our family members, our siblings, our parents, our community, our neighbors, in the workplaces, our colleagues... Then I think we get to know, we get to get a sense of people that we are working with or sitting beside or even sleeping beside, right? I think that makes a whole big of a difference towards belonging and really knowing who the other person is. I have been really blessed. I've been hosted by 2 great hosts over here. Mm. I've been hosted by this 85-year-old Grams. I call her Grams. Her name is Diane Schwabi and the Schwabi family. She has been such a lovely host, and I enjoy hearing her stories and getting to know America through her eyes.
Wow.
Yeah, and she has 85 years of experience. When Grams tell you something, you listen. I've come to realize that, right? And I love listening to her stories, because I think she has been very consistent and very intentional to share with me not just the good stories of America, but also the stories that we need to remember, or what we may not be talking about. And with Mike Cross, who is my placement host here, and he is the chief coaching and consulting officer of Global Bound LLC. His shared vision of really building better workplaces and supporting leaders to overcome performance hurdles makes a big difference when leaders care about their people and really want to hear what's going on with their people. And I think with that whole idea of caring about community, about belonging, that makes a big difference when people feel that they are part of something larger than themselves. Then I think we might build even more wellness and have more mentally healthier societies, not just organizations, but more mentally healthy families, communities, workplaces, and our society might be a mentally healthy one. And I wish our listeners a great mental health, to take good care of their mental health, and especially in this month.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Appreciate you sharing that. And I'm so glad that you got, I don't know how, it feels like a random selection, but here you are in Boise, like, how special. And I also thought that the Y Sealy program, if I'm saying that correctly, is pretty cool. So like, if you're listening and you want to be either a workplace host, mentor, like Mike is for you, or maybe a home host, then there's ways to connect and see if you can perhaps be a host and mean something super special to someone that is coming to visit, and do a really worthwhile work while you're here, and exchange that cultural knowledge, understanding, ways of seeing the world. That's such a special program. So yeah.
I'm really thankful to the American Councils for International Education, as well as the Maureen and Mike Mansfield Center of the University of Montana, okay, for co-creating this program so that, you know, I could come here and be with you in this space and share this beautiful space with our listeners as well.
Yeah.
I'm so really, really grateful to you, right, and the good work that you do.
Thanks. Yeah, you too. And thanks for all the interesting questions and helping me feel seen and cared about in that short time I've known you. So thank you for doing that. I'll put this in the show notes if anyone wants to look into being a host for that program. So, well, Yifeng, thank you so much. It's been a real joy to talk to you on the podcast today.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Holly.
Thank you for joining the conversation. For more information on how to be involved with refugee resettlement, please visit idahorefugees.org. Mosaics is produced by the Idaho Office for Refugees with grant support from the M.J. Murdoch Charitable Trust. Music by the Afrosonics. Production in partnership with SB Studios.